So I'm joined today in my ongoing series of discussions with titans of the board gaming industry by Stephen Bonacore, president of Stronghold Games, and certainly if anyone in this industry deserves the title titan, it's him, absolutely. Now, Stephen, I was so happy to meet you in the Christmas party with the Spiel from an audio sense. Thank you so much for making the time to speak with our listeners today.
Oh, thank you, Mark, for having me on. And I hope to live up to the title of Titan. I like that title. I mean, that's a biggie. So I appreciate you bestowing that upon me, little old me here from Florida. But you're from Tasmania. That's like the greatest like place name on earth, I think. Tasmania. You know, we dumb Americans don't know that place more than like what was called the Tasmanian Devil on the Bugs Bunny cartoons. And there really is an animal called the Tasmanian Devil, isn't there?
Absolutely, yes. But yeah, it doesn't look anything like the cartoon one.
I bet not.
It sort of looks like a small dog, large cat sort of size.
There you go. Well, we like dogs and cats here a lot. So, yeah, I'm sure we would really enjoy seeing a Tasmanian Devil. Well, I'm going to call you a Tasmanian Devil. How's that? Well, you're a Tasmanian Devil and I'm a Titan. I think that's a great way to start this.
There you go. What a team. Now, Stephen, just want to touch a bit on your history. Now, as I understand, you're a former IT management professional of many years, but always a geek.
Always a geek. You're correct. I was in IT on Wall Street for like 35 years of my career, my entire career. And in the last 10 of those years, basically a little less than that, I began Stronghold Games. And I thought of it was going to be like a retirement job. Like I would actually do a retirement and then like just continue this for just to do something. But before that point, well before I was set to retire, I couldn't do both anymore. Stronghold had blown up and started doing just so well that I had to physically leave the IT world and just do Stronghold full time. And yes, I've been a geek forever. So I mean, since I was a child, I was always a gamer. During high school, we started with D&D and all that. I did the whole computer thing in the early days of computers with computer gaming. I didn't get into MMOs. I was a CCG player with Magic and Vampire the Eternal Struggle. But then I just came full circle back to board games during the whole resurgence, you know, when, you know, Catan came back and then we had Ticket to Ride and
yes,
all those great games being put out. And I just said, this is the kind of gaming that I like to do. I'm a very social person. It's pretty easy to see that and hear it. And I believe that the best way to do gaming is to sit around a table with the family or with friends and to either compete or cooperate over a game board. That to me is the single best way to be a gamer.
But it certainly sounds great to us. And look, I do remember fondly, I've been a long-time listener of The Spiel, I remember those first ads for Code 777 on The Spiel. I think that was some of the first ads they had on their podcast. The other one you obviously started with was Survive, Escape from Atlantis, absolute classic.
And still one of the best sellers in my catalog.
Yeah.
Still doing fantastically. Yeah, an evergreen title, as we call it.
Yes, and so you started with those reprints, and very high component quality, very high game quality, and you set a very high bar very early. Now, one of the games that we're most interested in, though, and we've talked a lot about this on our show recently, is Terraforming Mars. Now, obviously, Frick's Games has had a massive hit on their hands. What stage did Stronghold and Frick's get involved together?
Yeah, that's a great question. So early on, when you know Frick's had this idea for this game, we were introduced to them by the printer, the largest printer of games in the world right now, I believe, Ludofact in Germany.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, Ludofact was looking to print the game with Frick's, and we were printing many of our games over at Ludofact, and the contacts there knew that I was very aggressive, looking for more games, looking for more partnerships. And they introduced the two companies, Frick's Games and Stronghold Games, and it's been history ever since. Now, we got involved at a point where they believed that the game was pretty much ready to go. And we played it and we said, you got something great here, but this game really isn't quite ready yet.
Oh.
So we took a year with them. And this is not something that we'll normally do, meaning most times Frick's Games are great people. There are 16 siblings in the family,
wow.
10 boys and six girls, and a lot of them have input into the company and into various portions of it. So they had this game, but we said to them, listen, guys, we think we can do this, make this a little bit better. So I said, it's going to cost you time, but I think in the end, it's going to be a good idea for us to do this. So basically, we spent another year almost. They wanted to have the game out at Essen 2015. We spent almost another year. So the game actually released in the early fall of 2016, and we had it at Essen, of course, 2016. We did much development with them. I had a guy here, Jeff Gamble, who he's a very good friend of mine and a great game developer, and he spent countless hours back and forth tweaking things, making some changes. The whole concept of taking two actions per turn was something Jeff came up with, because, you know, just doing that one action, you can't get those great combos. So we came up with that for him. We came up with the fact that it would be great if we could do this as a sort of a beginner and an intermediate and an advanced game all in the same box. So all of that is reflected in there so that most gamers just jump in to the full thing. But we also wanted to make sure that we could have this game somewhat accessible to just a novice gaming crowd. Now the big gamers, the alpha gamers, have already jumped on this and gone crazy, but we want to continue pushing this out to people who are not as fluent in all of the major, you know, more complicated games one sees now.
Yes. And
certainly, even though Terraforming Mars is only a middleweight game, still it is more complicated than a game that a new gamer might want to get into right from the bat. So we've come up with a lot of things. Jeff came up with a lot of things in working with them, and I think all for the better. And I think, you know, obviously the sales and the acceptance by all gamers worldwide has really shown that this is really a great game.
And you've obviously had a lot of success, not only with the base game, but also with the expansions. Mm-hmm. And now we'll chat, I think, in a little while about your new and upcoming expansion. But the mm-hmm. question that's on our lips, is there going to be Terraforming Mars Big Box Edition?
That may be the biggest question that I'm asked about Terraforming Mars. The short answer is no comment. The longer answer is, I will be completely frank with you. It's not like we're actively working on it. The point where I won't comment anymore is probably the point where you can say, oh, they must be actively working on it. But it certainly is 100% in my head and in Frick's head and in the new Indie Game Studios, which is the merged company, of mm-hmm. course, as you know, with Indie Boards and Cards. It's in our heads to do that. And we're at this time just simply trying to figure out which the best way to handle it. I got to tell you that I think the best way to handle it is to go collector's edition route, not just like big box, but really collector's level edition, way blown out, painted tiles, and just really, really, really something that people would want to own and be really proud of, making it one of the centerpieces of their game collection. Because the game is certainly popular enough at being the number 4 ranked game of all time.
I mean, I know, that's incredible, isn't it?
It's astonishing. It's truly transformational, you know, for a company such as ours. So we think that the game is certainly popular enough to have a very expensive version. This, you know, we're talking, once you get to like something you're going to call collector's edition, you're probably at the $300 or more range, you know, of things.
Yes.
So nothing promised here in any way. And I guarantee we're not talking to the manufacturers right now to figure out how to do it. But it is on my roadmap mentally to have something such as that come out.
I'm sure you did see recently There was a Kickstarter for a custom tile set for Terraforming Mars. Did you see that?
We did.
I guess, you know, that was not a massive campaign, but the fact that they raised over 40,000 euros from less than 1,000 backers clearly shows that people are willing to spend big dollars to improve their Terraforming Mars experience. Did you have any involvement? Did they have your permission? Was there anything happening there?
Short answer is no, okay, and no. Yeah. They didn't. But they're, you're allowed to do those kinds of things. They did not use the trademarks and things like that. Yes. So we're not going to try to stop people from doing that. It's kind of bad karma on some level. Neither do we, actively promote, other people's, yes, add-ons or anything like that. We don't endorse any. People have come to me and they said they want a license Terraforming Mars brand and they'll pay us royalties, and we keep saying literally no, we're not going to, because we don't want to endorse any one product. In the end, we're going to do something that we're really going to be proud of, and I think gamers worldwide will really embrace when they see what we end up doing.
Okay, and no Terraforming Mars movie coming down the pipeline?
It's funny. Somebody mentioned, like what game would you like to see made into a movie or TV series? And Terraforming Mars came up, and I said, well, it sort of is already. If you've ever seen the Nat Geo Mars show, it's now in its finished. They finished two full seasons of it, and really, that's what the show is about. It's about not only the first missions to Mars, but the starting of the terraforming process. I don't know how many seasons they're going to continue, and they're obviously not going to continue over generations, right? Which is, the game of Terraforming Mars takes place essentially over the course of 400 plus years, 14 generations, whatever your average game is. I don't think you can have something quite that epic in a television series or a movie, but I'm enjoying watching that. I don't think anybody has come to us yet to try to get rights for a TV series or movie.
Yeah, it's an interesting blend of documentary and fiction, isn't it?
Yes, it's sort of a documentary, but it's a fictional. It's a very fictional version of that, because obviously we're not doing a documentary. I mean, it has to have happened already. But they're doing a nice job of keeping most things real. It's a little too emotionally dramatic on some level, But I think that's sort of TV. They've got to kind of keep the people very emotional about different things, and they've done that. But what I've been reading just recently? I've started to read Red Mars, which is the book series by Kim Stanley Robinson from the 80s. And that series of books, and I'm gonna kind of pitch it right now to everybody out there. I'm most of the way through the first book, and that book is truly sort of Terraforming Mars the book. That really is what that is, and you know that Jacob Frixelius, the designer of Terraforming Mars, one of the Frix brothers, he drew direct inspiration from the book. He even credits it in various ways in the rules. The rules examples, the names of the players, and the rules examples are Kim Stanley and Robinson. So he's been playing an homage to those books, and they were kind of seminal works at the time, and a pretty interesting read for those who want to see how an author might write about them in a fictitious manner.
You mentioned, and we're well aware of it, we've actually mentioned it on our show before, that you've got the upcoming expansion Turmoil coming to Kickstarter soon. How far away is that one? And you want to give us some details about it?
Absolutely, I will. It's going to be very soon. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to drop, but it might be dropping right around April 16th, which is a week from.
Ooh.
We're recording this, if it's okay for me to say, on
of
April
course,
5th.
Yeah.
And so it's a week from Tuesday, so it's only in about whatever that is, like 12 days from now or something like that. And Terraforming Mars Turmoil, the fifth expansion, and we are calling it the final expansion, though I can see other things coming out. It's certainly going to be the final major expansion to the game. And what happens in Turmoil? Well, what happens when any large group of people end up getting together and they have differing ideas on how something should happen? That's called politics, right? That's called factions develop. And now these factions are going to develop on the planet Mars, and there's going to be turmoil. There's going to be different views on how we should be terraforming, or maybe we should slow down and not do so much terraforming. So we'll have like the red party, the reds will be like, no, like let's leave Mars the way it is. This is like a great place to you know, keep as a pristine environment and not do too much of this terraforming. And then you'll have the greens who say, no, we have to green everything up, make this as Earth-like as possible. The Kelvinists want to continue pushing up temperatures on Mars because that's going to be the key to getting it more and more habitable. There's a science party. There's going to be six major factions on Mars, and you'll be sending delegates to the terraforming council, which is kind of like a Senate. You can think of it like that, a parliament for Mars. And you'll be influencing the different factions, the parties on Mars. And why would one want to do that? Because there'll be these global event cards that come out. There'll be the current global event, the next generation global event, and then three generations from now, a third turn from now, you'll be seeing another event. So you'll be able to plan for these events, and depending on who's in power, you're either going to get bigger benefits from the global event going off, or maybe a lesser detriment, because some of the global events are not going to be so good. So you're going to want to influence the parties strategically at the right times to get extra benefits or less detriments when these global events trigger. And they, of course, they're not random. I mean, they'll be random, but you'll be able to plan for them as you move ahead. You'll be might say, wow, in two generations from now, if I don't have at least some people in the scientists' party, then I'm going to get hit with some really bad stuff. So yes. I'm going to make sure I get some things going on there. And that's going to be the flow. We're deeming this an expert expansion because it's going to add like a completely much bigger mechanic off to the side. It's like an area control of the various factions on Mars. It'll probably add a little bit of time to the game, but for people who want more and more meat on the bone of terraforming Mars, this is going to really, really, really be a big thing for them. So we're really excited about this. Coming to Kickstarter, starting on April 16th, and it's already been leaked out that there will be, as part of the Kickstarter, some new player boards. Ooh. That we'll be putting out, some new double-layer cardboard player boards. That's the single thing that people like, you know,
yes,
want the most is to have new player boards. We're going to do that. Anybody who backs the Kickstarter, you're going to be able to get those double layer player boards that people have really wanted.
That's fantastic news, because obviously you have almost single-handedly created an industry where yeah, people are making these add-ons for games. And, you know, if it's not foam core type things to help you organize your box, the other piece that you absolutely need in your game is your player board for terraforming Mars. Because anyone who's ever bumped their table and made those little cubes go flying knows how frustrating it is, that's for sure. So that's fantastic news.
It's going to be great. I think people are going to really like what we've come up with. We're actually still literally tweaking the design of it.
Yep.
But we know what people want. We're responding to it, and I think that in the end, they're going to enjoy that. And of course, I'd like to say, just in case, because the question will come up with your fans, no, they won't be exclusive to Kickstarter. I don't believe in exclusives. I think that's a bad thing to do.
Yes.
In Kickstarters or anything, it makes people feel like they weren't special. So yes, if you don't, for whatever reason, and that's fine, don't want to back the Kickstarter, they will be available in some format later. You're going to have to obviously pay for them and pay more than you would if it was on the Kickstarter, but they will be available.
Well, the last thing you want to do is alienate, space pun, your existing fan base, which is a massive group of people. So that's great to hear. Now, I think we've probably talked enough about terraforming Mars. I want to just go back, and you did mention the merger with Indie Boards and Cards, and then you've also got Action Phase Gaming there in the mix. How has that changed what you do on a daily basis?
Well, the merger came up. Travis Worthington, who is the owner of Indie Boards and Cards, and yes, I were very, very good friends, and we have been. Our companies almost grew up simultaneously. He started his company up 6 months to a year before I started mine. There's a whole bunch of companies that kind of started at that time. And he and I have been great friends. And we've joked with each other as we are both growing at almost the same rate. We were very similar sized companies for the longest time, different business models, but very similar size. We joked with each other for years, like, oh, I'm going to buy you. No, I'm going to buy you, that kind of thing. And, you know, with all of the mergers and acquisitions that were going on,
it was
just an ongoing joke that we had. Well, early last year, Travis basically dropped me a note and said, you know, we've been joking about this for years. Why don't we get serious and see if this would really make sense? So we basically signed some NDAs, and at the Gathering of Friends last year, which is that Alan Moon's invitation-only convention that he throws every year, Travis and I sat down and we outlined what this would entail and the money, of course. It always going to come down to money as well, how that would all work out. And in the end, it was really a marriage made in heaven. We're very different people, and that is a very good thing, because Travis is a very, you know, no one knows what Travis looks like, almost, much less, you know, has spoken to him. He's behind the scenes. He likes to stay that way. He's a private guy. And me, I'm a raging extrovert. I want to be at all the conventions. I want to be, you know, hugging the gamers, playing games, kissing babies. You know, I'm the kind of person that's the great front man. So literally that's what we did, right? I maintain the title and the work responsibilities of the president of Stronghold Games, but I'm the spokesperson for the merged company, which is now called Indie Game Studios, with the brands of Stronghold Games, Indie Boards and Cards, and to a lesser degree, Action Phase Games. Really, the Action Phase Games brand, while it is seen on boxes, it's always seen with the Indie Boards and Cards brand. He had bought Action Phase Games 2 years ago. It was like fully integrated, and they're not using the brand as much, though we may resurrect it on some level. Meanwhile, we're going to operate Indie Boards and Cards and Stronghold Games as significant brands under Indie Game Studios, because we have a different focus, both of those companies. Travis certainly has been known for the social deduction, the smaller games for the most part, though he's gotten into bigger ones with Aeon's End and the many expansions for that. Stronghold Games, for bigger games and partnership games, bringing games over from Europe. That's our big focus.
Yes.
And we dabble in the smaller games. So we are very complementary titles and complementary people. This is going to enable us to hire more people. We're already at 12 people or so. We're now able to get specialized positions, right? We have a marketing director for the company now. We have project managers, production people. So all of these things will enable us to truly compete on a bigger, even more global scale, you know, with the really big player or players out there, CMON being like the second biggest company, and of course Asmodee,
yes,
the truly 800-pound gorilla in the industry. But we're now probably the third largest in North America, and we're happily positioned in that space, and we'll continue to compete heavily and maintain and grow in that space, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Are you looking in your rearview mirror all the time for Asmodee to come up and swallow you up? Is that a possibility now you're so successful?
I mean, listen, there's always a, you know, you never say never to anything, but it's not a goal right now, at least. I mean, it's just not. We could do great things with the current company, the current structure. We're going to continue to refine it to get more efficient, to continue to hire the right individuals into the company. Sure. Could they at some point make us an offer we can refuse, as the Godfather would say?
Yes.
Sure. But the goal right now is to continue to make great games for gamers. And gamers always say, like, oh, you know, it's really bad when, you know, with this Asmodee doing and buying is only going to be one, you know, this one company. I'm like, there's still always going to be 1,000 other choices, even if we were taken over. There are so many game companies out there. There's like sort of one of them, and there's 1,000 of us.
Yes.
So I think they've been a very positive influence in the industry. But at the same point, we do need to stand our ground, and kind of like, now that we are that other choice, we can be that for other designers out there and for other partners out in Europe. So they would want to potentially partner with us before a larger company, because we'll focus more on their games than a company that has to bring out 100 games per year, right, to be profitable, and Asmodee, right? That's how I see us moving forward.
And look, diversity is a great thing, that's for sure, isn't it?
Absolutely is, on every level.
Now, Stephen, wanted to ask you, now obviously you're doing Kickstarter for Turmoil. You've done other Kickstarter projects before. How do you see Kickstarter evolving and how it fits in with a successful company like Indie Game Studios and Stronghold? How do you see those things going forward? Because it has been very much a large, not shadow on the landscape of gaming, but it's, I guess there are always questions about Kickstarter going to change the way that the game industry works, and has it become too large?
So Indie Boards and Cards has traditionally done Kickstarters. That's been the way that they've brought out games, though they also went direct into distribution as well.
Yep.
But they found that the games that they Kickstarted were on average more successful in distribution than games that went direct to distribution.
Okay.
Having stated that, Stronghold Games has traditionally not done Kickstarters. We did one in 2014. It was successful, did very well. It was for Space Cadets Away missions. It was a $100 game with 102 plastic miniatures. Great. And I said, I'll never do it again. Because it's so much work
yes.
to do those things. But now, with the merger, we have more people. Bonacor does not have to manage these things. I have to find the great games, and then collectively we structure the Kickstarter so that it works. And people will manage the general flow of the Kickstarter for the company. Kickstarter has become, regardless of what it was in the past, it has become a marketing event.
Yes.
And that's a very important thing to state. Eyes of gamers, eyes of so many like alpha gamers, are only focused on Kickstarter. They only want to know what the next Kickstarter is. When's that happening? What's happening on Kickstarter? So they focus out there and they miss things that are going on when they're just going out into distribution. So we have to capitalize on that. We have to utilize that as a marketing event.
Yes.
So this is what, for instance, we just did Aftershock, the Alan Moon game that we're very excited about, to work with Alan Moon, the designer of Ticket to Ride, and very good friend of mine. He's sort of coming out of a retirement on some level. He's done only a very few small games, really, and many Ticket to Ride expansions over the years. He's now got a co-designer, and he's come out again, and he's come out with a nice big game called Aftershock, San Francisco and Venice, about earthquakes, and we kickstarted that. It was successful. We're going to be bringing that out. And now we're going to be doing it for our major releases for this year. We're still going to do three times as many direct distribution games. But for the big ones, Aftershock, Turmoil, we're going to be doing Agizia, a second edition called Shifting Sands Edition. Ooh. This is a reprint of a game from about 10 years ago that had become a Grail game because you couldn't find it. We'll be doing that one. We have some other ones that are going to come up. So we're going to be using that for our big, we got it. We want to have people focus on these releases and know that they're happening, but then the other ones will come out. In general, I think Kickstarter is going to become even more important to the industry, not less important. There has been many years where predictions of the gloom and doom that Kickstarter is going to die out because there'll be big failures and stuff. But you know what? There's been failures. And people still keep coming back, and people still focus on Kickstarter. So we have to recognize it, that it's too important to simply say, oh, dismiss this. You know, we'll just do it the old-fashioned way.
Yes.
We've got to be there the way gamers are looking at games. Simple as that.
Now, you mentioned, Stephen, the other thing that you have been fantastic at is bringing some of these European games to the English-speaking, North American, and Australian markets. I'm looking at your schedule on your website for releases. It looks like you've got some Wolfgang Warsh action happening later this year, and you've already got Gunshon Clever. That's pretty clever. You've got his second game, the Twice as Clever, coming up soon.
Yep.
That's obviously a bit of a gold mine for you.
Yeah, well, we're really excited about working with Wolfgang, and that's with a new partnership. Actually, there's a couple of different partnerships that have made that occur. So with Schmidt Spiele, mm-hmm. which is a very it's one of those names that people don't know, but they are a huge company in Germany.
Yes,
almost as big as Ravensburger, which is like the Hasbro of Germany. Obviously, not as big as Hasbro, but they're that kind of company. more toward the mass market. Schmidt is almost as big as that, but they're more to the gamers market. So we reached out to them to get the license for Ganshun Clever, which we've, you know, now is we're calling it That's Pretty Clever. And with that, a cascade of great games came to us, all of these roll-and-writes, three of them by Wolfgang Warsch. A guy is just genius. So we got That's Pretty Clever. We got Twice as Clever. We've got Bricks, also by Wolfgang Warsch. And then we've got two more going to be coming out. One is called Dizzle by Ralph Zurlindy. And we haven't even announced this yet, so this is sort of a little bit of a thing I'm giving you, though. Ooh. It's just about to get out. The game is called, in German, Nach Mal. We're going to be calling it Encore. It's the biggest selling roll and write in Germany. Yes, even bigger than Ganshun Clever. It's slightly easier, so a little more mass market, but it's designed by noted Spiel des Jahres winning designers Inka and Marcus Brand, who did The Village back, one of the earlier winners of the Spiel des Jahres.
Well, and the Escape games.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So they've got
the exit games, I should say.
Exit, right. They're escape room-like games,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So very big cred on all of those games. So that's our partnership with Schmidtspiele. We've also got Subtext by Wolfgang Warsch, which is a drawing game. It's a game where you know, drawing well has nothing to do with winning. You have to draw cleverly. All of Wolfgang's games are just so darn clever.
Yes.
I mean, this is the guy. They're all these outside-the-box kind of games. The guy is pretty... Just a genius. I mean, he's came out of nowhere to be like the single hottest designer right now in the industry. So those games, plus, of course, we're going to continue our partnership with 2F Spiele. That's Freedom and Freeze's company.
Yes.
We know that we're going to have two games at least from him this year. I may meet him at the Gathering of Friends in about a week from now. We're going to meet up there. We take a look at what's happening for the end of the year. That's all of our Essen releases with them. Plus, we're going to have games with Laute Pellet and other partners. So we continue doing that. And again, that was sort of the mid-strategy for Stronghold, you know, to create this, you know, this worldwide brand that was going to be, you know, known for bringing these games across the pond and then back out to the rest of the world, especially for smaller publishers who don't have the global distribution access that we have.
Yeah, well, you certainly succeeded in bringing some of those, particularly the German companies and other European companies, to forefront of knowledge for gamers in America, Australia, mm-hmm. even the UK. Now, when I asked you about this one at the Christmas party, and I'm going to ask you again, our good friend here at the Dice Men Cometh, Martin Wallace, we now call him Australian. He's living in Brisbane. I played a prototype of his at a gaming con last year that he told me he was putting together for you, a mafia game, but a very different mafia game where it's sort of like the business of the mafia. Is anything happening with that game?
Well, that would be a truly one that I'd have to say no comment on. I can't really talk too much about that because we don't have that game yet in house. We got the original pitch and it had to go back, you know, to Martin for some stuff. So
yes.
We don't have it yet. I have always believed that there does not exist a truly, truly great game about the mafia. And I thought that Wallace's historical take, you know, because he does a lot of games with like serious historical portions. His recent one, Australia, which was a retelling, so that one doesn't count. But a lot of Martin's greatest games have like a history kind of background to them. And I always thought that if he was the one to kind of take that tact on the historical, the way the mafia operated, and they operated quite a bit as a business as well when they were, you know, in power during like the Capone times, that would be interesting. And Martin came up with something that was pretty cool, but it needed some work. So he still got that in his court. So we don't have it actively on the schedule.
Okay, well, we'll keep our eyes out for that one. Sounds like you have got so many new games coming. You've teased us with a heap of them. Is there anything that you're particularly excited about getting to the table now as a gamer yourself?
You know, with all this free time that I have now, living, you know, in retirement in Florida. No, it's funny. You know, it's kind of a little sad that I've played less, even less than I was playing back in New Jersey, because I had a, you know, a solid game group that would meet, you know, weekly, either like we meet for the gamer games or meet for party games, which I love party games. I'm a big party gamer as well. But now in Florida, I don't have that group anymore. But yet I have to reestablish it. I've been playing, sadly, less games that aren't like in my own catalog. But I've been playing quite a few of those to make sure they're going to work right, and so that I can pitch and teach them and stuff.
Yes.
So some of the stuff that I'm loving, and it's like my go-to game in my own catalog, is Flamme Rouge. Have you got a chance to play Flamme Rouge?
When we were talking about Lauterpellet, I immediately thought of them. We are huge fans of Flamme Rouge here.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. It's you know, and it's funny because it's such not an American theme. I don't know how bicycle racing flies in Australia and New Zealand down under there, but it's not an American theme at all. You know, but once people play the game and get past that, they're like, wow, this is simply the best racing game they've ever played, and it's so thematic. For anybody who does know the sport, or even can conceive of the way the sport runs, with the way the bikes will draft each other,
yes.
So you can get extra movement from drafting, the way that you have different types of cyclists. Some of them are the more steady ones. Those in the game are known as the rollers. And some of them have these huge bursts of speed, but then they absolutely tire out very quickly too. And those are the sprinters. So it plays so much like an actual bike race, or even car race on some level as well. We just love it. And every time, you know, I have friends that I can get a game out there with, that's one of the ones that we go to with, you know, Flamme Rouge and the Peloton expansion that came out last year. And now the new one called Meteo, which is weather. So now you have weather effects on the track. So, and there's a, it's another one in progress that I can't talk about.
so exciting. Yeah. Look, there seems to be a subculture here in Australia of people who stay up all night and watch the Tour de France. Now, I have never been a huge cycling man myself, but I'm amazed how many people stay up in the middle of the night to watch the Tour de France here. There's a huge body of them. So I think you're right. The game does an amazing job of simulating what's not an incredibly exciting sport, because it happens over such a long period, but it's not a long game, and it's so much fun. I think you're right. I have found it almost the perfect racing game.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I mean, I'm obviously biased, but
of course.
To me, it is a very modern take on racing games. And if you've ever played like Ave Caesar, which was, you know, a single card based racing game, it's sort of like takes that general idea, completely modernizes it, and makes it a true strategy game, you know, for a gamer. So really, really digging it. I highly recommend people, you know, checking that out if they get a chance, Flamme Rouge.
And before I let you go, Stephen, any plans to journey down under?
I would love to. I really, really would love to. I hear that, Australian Games Festival, is that what it's called? I've been invited like to come down. I'm trying to remember what it's actually called. Do you know the?
We've got PAX Australia.
And that's not the one that I've been invited to. There's another one that that the distributors keep touting to say, please come on down. I would like to go. It's obviously a very big trip.
Yes.
Let's put that one as a, who knows what's going to happen in 2020.
Okay.
This year I'm making my first trip to the UK Games Expo. So maybe we add that for next year. Let's see if we can get an Australia trip out of me next year.
It can be a stretch goal, that's for sure.
Maybe a stretch goal on the Turmoil expansion. If we get this $4 million, Bonacore will get on a plane and come out to Australia. I want to go to New Zealand a lot because I want to visit Hobbiton. I want to go see Lord of the Rings sets that they've got down there. I'm a huge nerd, a huge Tolkien nerd. So I'm a nerd for everything. I'm dying to see Avengers Endgame, which is coming out like in 2 weeks
or so. Far away now, that's for sure.
I know. I just got my tickets. They went on sale. I got my tickets the first day. So I just got to wait till it comes out. Yeah, I'm a nerd in all ways.
Well, you know, you're going to have to do your research for whichever game has the Tasmanian expansion.
There you go. There must be something. Somebody must have done something for you guys.
Yeah, well, Australia could have a Tasmania expansion or something like that. Who knows?
Like that. I like that. I'll get Martin on that right now.
Look, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope I'm not holding you up for a frosty beverage, because I understand you, like myself, are both a craft beer enthusiast, and you do a bit of home brewing still, do you?
I am a huge craft beer enthusiast. Anybody who's ever spoken to me or heard me on many podcasts, including my own podcast,
yes,
quick plug for that, right? Board Games Insider with Ignacy Cevicek of Portal Games. Ignacy refuses to let me talk about beer because he doesn't drink, but I'll always put a little. He drinks tea. He's a big tea guy, just regular hot tea. But huge beer person. I don't homebrew anymore. I did that many, many, many years ago, but that doesn't stop me from finding great craft beers across the world, or definitely across the U.S. And it is now approximately 5 p.m. Local time here in Florida. So as soon as I hang up here, my girlfriend and I will be heading out for the evening to have dinner, and I'm sure that some craft beer will be part of that as well. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. This has been a
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for making the time. We're very excited to see Terraforming Mars Turmoil come out, as you said, any minute now. Even more than that, there's so many new games coming up for Stronghold. So congratulations on your success, and thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thank you so much. Let me just tell people where they can find me, if you don't mind.
Please,
on
yes.
the interwebs. We're very active on Twitter. In fact, on Twitter, you'll be talking basically directly to me. I do all of the retweets and the replies, basically. And that's at Stronghold Games on Twitter. Also at Stronghold Games on Instagram. / Stronghold Games on Facebook, so you can check us out there. We have a special page on Facebook for Board Games Insider Podcast, if you want to follow us there. And, of course, if you want to just listen to Ignacy and I talk about the games industry and take questions from our guild on Board Game Geek, you can go and find us at BGI Podcast on Twitter and Board Games Insider, as I mentioned, on Facebook. Thank you so much again for having me on. Been a pleasure. And maybe we can do this again in the future. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks again for your time today, Stephen. Lovely to chat. And yeah, I definitely will come back to you in the future. That's for sure. You've been awesome.
That's cool. Hey, this is Stephen Bonacore of Stronghold Games, and you're listening to The Dice Men Cometh with Mark, who is the real Tasmanian devil.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.